It was almost 2 years ago that I had a conversation with Dr. James Gilligan, who helped us get a better grasp on what's happening behind the scenes when it comes to violence. Let's play that back again. Let's see if we can capture some insights this time that we may have missed the first time. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Speaking with Carl Thornton Jr., the program where we really do encourage the celebration of diversity and the promotion of harmony. How many of you would say we need that? Well, joining us today is someone who's going to help us get a better feel for what's happening behind the scenes when it comes to violence. You're going to get a better idea of what I mean when I say behind the scenes, because I think that some of us have some preconceived notions of what's happening, and we see it from one perspective and only one perspective, and that perspective is awesome, very, very limited. We're going to gain some insights that I think are going to really, really help us with this. And our expert who's going to talk us through this is Dr. James Gilligan. He's a clinical professor of psychiatry in the School of Medicine, an adjunct professor in the School of Law, and collegiate professor in the School of Arts and Science at the famed New York University. He's former president of the International Association for Forensic Psychotherapy. Dr. Gilligan, it is so good to have you with us today. How are you doing, sir?
Fine, thank you. Nice to be here.
I tell you what, this is a conversation that I'm really looking forward to, because one of the things that I'm hoping, Dr. Gilligan, will happen by the time, actually during our conversation, but certainly by the time we wrap up our conversation today, is that people will have not only a better understanding of what's going on in the lives of people who commit violence, but also a greater appreciation for the people themselves and what kinds of steps we need to be considering and getting that turned around.
Very good. Those are the things I'm interested in.
Awesome. So, Dr. Gilligan, you can do a much better job than I've done at introducing Dr. Gilligan to the Speaking With community. If you would share with us more about the life of James Gilligan before you were James Gilligan, MD, what kinds of things were happening in your life as a child? What shaped you as a child? What shaped you as a teenager? What shaped you as a young adult? What eventually led to your decision to go into psychiatry? And then, even more specifically, to specialize in the area of violence.
Okay, I'll be glad to share that with you and with the audience. I grew up in a small town in Nebraska, kind of a very rural area. My father was a doctor, a physician and surgeon, general practitioner. And during my childhood, he was, although he was a very dedicated surgeon, I think devoted to his patients and his practice, at home he was very violent. He would knock my two brothers across the room to the point where I was afraid he was going to accidentally kill one of them. He would beat them and hit them and so forth. He did not do that to me, partly because I think I learned how not to provoke him, or at least how to stay out of his way. I think my mother protected me more than my brothers, but in any case, I grew up trying to be kind of the peacemaker and try to get the violence stopped. Now, as a child, of course, I couldn't do that. Even my mother couldn't until it had already occurred. So I certainly had that in my background, but actually it was not consciously in my mind when I was in college and decided to do my pre-med studies and go to medical school. I was interested in medical school because I wanted to go into psychiatry, because I did feel that the major problem confronting humanity was the personality disorders and the irrational behavior, the uncontrollable impulses. In other words, behavioral problems, which seem to me more important, or at least more interesting to me personally than the sort of more physical, biological, medical problems. But I wasn't really thinking in terms of an interest in violence as such then. But and I think I wasn't consciously aware how much my childhood history was influencing my choices, because I decided to take during my psychiatric training at the Harvard Medical School in Boston, I decided to take an elective rotation in something I'd never heard of before, I had no interest in, called prison psychiatry. I had been taught up to that point that people who got sent to prison were untreatable, that they were con artists, that they wouldn't tell you the truth, and you couldn't do meaningful psychotherapy with somebody who wouldn't tell you the truth about themselves, at least as they understood it. And so I took this rotation simply because I needed the money. I was already married, had three children, and the teaching hospital that was paying me such a small salary as a resident in the training in psychiatry that I couldn't pay the rent and buy the groceries. So I could earn a little extra money by spending a day a week in one of the state prisons. And once I got there, you know, I thought this was going to be an exercise in futility and a waste of time, that these men were untreatable. And then practically from the first day I spent in a prison, I'd never been in one before in my life, I discovered that almost everything that I thought I knew was wrong, or at least at best a half-truth, and that I really had to rethink my whole understanding of violent behavior.
So what brought that to your realization?
Well, the very first person I started working with was in for a series of violent crimes. He'd mugged and the armed robberies and assaults and so forth, and had been in and out of prison more than once. And he described to me how his father had beaten up everybody in the family, including his mother and himself. And he clearly had a broken nose and had other evidence that he had been beaten. But still, I thought he probably just was getting in barroom brawls, and he was giving me a sob story, so I'd feel sorry for him. And then I discovered that his father was in prison at the same time, because he had been convicted of killing his own daughter. That is my patient's sister. And I learned that not only was the patient inmate not exaggerating, he was only describing what had already been proven beyond a reasonable doubt in a court of law. What I learned then going on, virtually every seriously violent inmate I saw had been the victim of child abuse beyond the scale that I'd ever even realized occurred in our society. I'd say the most violent of the prisoners I worked with were the survivors of their own attempted murders at the hands of one or more parents or other family members, or they were the survivors of the actual murders of their closest relatives. I mean, the most violent people in the prison had, as I said, either their family members that tried to kill them, or they had witnessed the murder of a mother, a father, a brother, an uncle, whatever. Then when I would talk with them about why they had themselves assaulted or killed somebody, they'd say, because he disrespected me, or he disrespected my wife, my mother, my girlfriend, whatever. And they used that term, disrespect, so often they abbreviated it into the slang term, he dissed me.
Yeah.
And it struck me that any time somebody uses a term so often they abbreviate it, it tells you something about how central it is. in their moral and emotional vocabulary. And I began to realize that what these men were telling me was why they had committed their acts of violence, because they felt disrespected. And there are several synonyms one could use for disrespect. They felt insulted. They felt rejected. They felt ridiculed, treated as inferior. They felt that people had treated them as if they didn't matter. They were insignificant or unimportant. And I began to think of this as the notion that that one motive that is necessary for the causation of violence is the feeling of being shamed and humiliated. And I use shame as a kind of generic term, the way we use the word flower, but then we know there are all kinds of different flowers, roses, tulips, etc. Mm-hmm. And I use shame as a general word, but there are many ways people can be shamed: by being disrespected, laughed at, called names, mocked, ridiculed, rejected, and so forth. But these guys had suffered this to the point that it led to something I'd never heard of before, which I came to call the death of the self. When I say, when I speak of the most violent men here, which is what I'm trying to focus on, I'm talking about multiple murderers, serial rapists, and so on. They would tell me that they themselves had died before they even started killing other people. And what they meant by that was their personality had died, that they felt dead inside. They felt empty and numb. They would mutilate themselves. They would cut themselves or insert foreign objects into every orifice in their body. Just horrendous mutilations of themselves.
Trying to harm themselves, trying to make themselves feel real, a combination of things?
Yeah, it was the only way they could make themselves feel real. I mean, they found the sense of numbness, but they felt numb to both physical sensations and emotions. And when they would mutilate themselves, they would be surprised when they didn't even feel it. And but they would find that when the blood would flow, it would reassure them that they really were alive, that they weren't a zombie or a robot or a vampire, which were the terms they would use to describe themselves, how they felt. And when I would inquire as to what led them to feel dead and when they started feeling dead, it would always lead back to an experience of just extreme humiliation, feeling rejected, feeling unloved, and so forth. And it struck me that's how I could understand how the child abuse they had suffered could turn them into a violent adult. Because nothing makes a person feel more unloved than to be a victim of abuse. I mean, even a pet dog knows it's not loved when it's kicked.
Yes,
and
sir.
I think human beings are certainly no less perceptive than dogs are.
Ladies and gentlemen, Dr. Gilligan is already shedding tremendous light on this issue of violence. And as you're hearing, it's not as simple as just someone with a bad attitude. A whole lot more is behind it. Stay with us as Dr. Gilligan shares more insights on what's happening in the world of the violent when we come back.